Plugged into the online broadcast network, AfterBuzz TV. Over 20 million weekly downloads in over 150 countries and your number one source for after-show entertainment. TV, the destination for TV superfans, producing aftershows for over 300 of your favorite TV shows, interviewing celebrities and showrunners, and bringing you behind-the-scenes exclusives. All thanks to E! Entertainment's Maria Menounos, producer Kevin Undergaro, and internet leader Akamai. Now, let the buzz begin!
Mama's gonna give you love. I don't know why I do that.
Welcome to the Bates Motel After Show, the AfterBuzz TV Bates Motel After Show. We are back, folks. We are officially back.
Woohoo!
Season 3, Bates Motel.
Very excited. Official episode.
We are one down.
We're officially
okay.
one down.
It's me, as always, Joe Braswell, joining you. I'm joined by the lovely Dua Casey.
Hi, welcome. I'm so excited to be back.
I know. I'm excited to have you. And I'm joined by the Nando Velasquez.
no adjective.
Well, no, you've got
no adjective.
Freshly shaven, like, haircut is happening.
Okay,
you're looking good.
Nando needs no introduction.
Nando's been training for the LA Marathon, yeah. So he's looking quite svelte.
I'm running a marathon on Sunday.
Yes,
woo-hoo!
Get ready. I am not running a marathon on Sunday.
Feel free to tweet at me at NandoVel, give me encouragement.
Sure.
Instagram. I'm gonna tweet a bunch of stuff too, and maybe I'll bring my medal next week if you guys are really.
Are you gonna tweet while you're running?
Yeah.
Run tweet.
I'm gonna take breaks. Maybe I'll stop and do a quick tweet or something. Yeah.
Okay. Well, yeah. I'll be following you.
For those of you on iTunes, spot, he shook his head no.
Empty spot at the table and in our hearts belongs to Joe Braswell. Joe Sanfilippo,
yes.
who's not here for the premiere episode, but he will be back next week. And so, Joe, we miss you. I know you're out there doing your thing. Some VO crap, whatever it is you do.
He's kind of a big deal.
he's kind of a big
he's
deal.
Working yeah. on some other junk that's more important than this, apparently. Anyway, nothing. But we're all here. We're so glad. We're happy to be back. This is one of our favorite shows. We're so excited to talk about this, and there's plenty to talk about. We'll talk about some of the stuff that happened off-season. I mean, we covered a lot of it. As you may or may not know, most of you did tune in and download us, and thank you. We had a nice pre-show with a couple of great guests. We had Nestor Carbonell, Nat Campbell.
Our new BFF Nestor,
second time guest in the program.
Yeah,
gotta Woo! Love him. Gotta love him.
And rumor has it he's coming back for a third time for episode 5.
Yeah, nice. we're hoping to.
We'll see. I'm calling it right now.
That's the episode that he directed.
That's the episode he directed.
And also the lovely Tracy Spiridakos.
Oh, you know what?
Pterodactyls, I call her.
I wonder how much she actually hates that. She said last time that that was her, what she got teased with, that people
right.
called her pterodactyl. They
sure.
called her whole family the pterodactyl family. So now we call her pterodactyl, and I wonder
yes.
if that really irritates her.
I'm sure it does, but she still loves us, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Hello, Tracy. Hello, Nestor. And hello, everyone else who's joining us now. But enough of that. So if you didn't check that out, you can check that out on iTunes and YouTube, and it's pretty cool. We get into, like, a lot of last season. Yeah. And we
if you subscribe to us on iTunes, it should come up on your feed
yeah,
as
you
it
check
is.
It out.
Yeah.
And I will say, you know, again, you can find us. There's a lot of change. We've got kind of a new set if you haven't been here in a while. New logo.
I love our new logo.
Yeah, new stuff going on. Thanks to Stephen Lemieux for that. And, you know, we're on SoundCloud. We're on iTunes. We're not streaming live on YouTube. We're on YouTube. And, and on our website. So we're still in all the same places with more people. And hopefully, if you're first time joining us, thank you.
Woo!
And now, let's talk about the show. A lot happened, Dua.
Yes.
Man, a lot happened.
It's a death in the family.
I want to get into... a few things. I mean, we have Norma and Norman to talk about, the emergence of Annika,
mm-hmm.
You know, the Dylan and Romero,
Annika's gonna be trouble. I can just say that right now.
Well, is she gonna be trouble?
Mm-hmm.
She seems so sweet.
Oh.
That
she
Tracy.
Looks like Michelle Pfeiffer, doesn't she?
She does.
That's a little bit of that.
Wait,
Tracy or
wow.
Annika?
Well.
Tracy as Annika.
Yes. We gotta talk about Caleb, the return of Caleb.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
He's back.
Dunkle.
The
Dunkle.
The Dunkle.
Hashtag Dunkle.
Dunkle.
If you guys are on Twitter or if you're doing the live tweet, hashtag Dunkle. That is what we're
I
calling
like Dunkle.
Him now.
I don't like that.
I Dunkle. Like it. Dunkle.
All right. And so...
Dunkle Caleb.
So, yeah, Caleb's back. So let's get into this. So we open the show with, you know, Norman. So last we saw Norman and Norma, they just got through this horrific ordeal involving Miss Watson and her murder. And it was revealed that Norman did kill Miss Watson and he did black out. He had the big lie detector test. He passed the lie detector test by
almost killed himself. He went to the woods to kill himself.
Well, before the lie detector, yeah.
Yeah, but then
Norma saved him.
With a kiss.
With a kiss. With a very uncomfortable, way too long kiss from your mother.
Yeah.
brings him back. He passed the lie detector test by assuming the identity of his mother. Mm-hmm. Like, so we see the birth of
and his mother, as we know him. His mother next to him saying, "You didn't kill Blair Watson. I did."
Yeah.
And so that's how he convinced himself that he didn't kill her. That's how he convinced himself in the lie detector test.
And as I mentioned in a preview episode, an ending very reminiscent of Psycho with him sort of doing that weird creepy smile to camera and, you know, and fade to black. So here we are in season 3.
And it starts with them in bed.
Yeah, that's the way to start the season. I looked at that and I was like, oh, here we go.
They're in bed, and they're not only in bed, you know, they're spooning. They're spooning pretty hard. Like, you know, look, hey, you know what? You're 18, you get scared, you sleep with your mom.
Yeah, is that
a spooner?
Yeah.
Mm.
And you're 18 years old and you're spooning your mom, and they're just, and it's like, and she's just nuzzling and he's nuzzling and they're just nuzzled up, and it's, yeah. Welcome back to the Bates Motel.
Leave it to Dylan, who definitely takes the perspective of the audience when he sits down in the kitchen and he's like, you know, he's 18, he shouldn't be sleeping with you. And I thought that Norma played that so well.
God, Vera played that. Norma or Vera?
Vera.
Okay, because I agree. I love the way she played that. I love the way she plays Norma, because there's always this moment of like, I guess it's us as an audience, there's this feeling of like, does Norma know she's crazy? Does Norma know she does a bunch of crazy shit? Or is Norma like, sometimes she's completely self-aware, like, okay, well, I'm just going to do this. And sometimes she's oblivious. And it's this weird balance that Vera plays. And in that moment, it's like, well, she's embarrassed, clearly embarrassed. Like, well, he fell asleep. What's the big deal?
Yeah.
But she knows it's wrong. But almost like she knows it's wrong, but she doesn't want to admit it's wrong. Mm-hmm. But then after Dylan confronts her with it, there's some part of her is like, well, I guess it's wrong. So she just tells Norman later, like, you know, Norman, we shouldn't be doing this because Dylan said we shouldn't be doing this.
Exactly, she's a very selfish character because she's obviously thinking of herself.
Right.
You know, she's very smothering, but it's all really about her and her pain, and it's what she wants. Dylan kind of woke her up a little bit to that.
It's a great point.
But ultimately, we see it later on, you know, when she needs something.
Sure.
That's she goes back to that style.
That's a great point, Nando, because if you look at it from a perspective of Norman, Norma is just behaving in a selfish manner when she's called on it by the outside world. Like, Dylan's like, Mom, what are you doing? She's like, oh, well, I guess it is weird. Shoot. All right, well, Dylan said I can't do this anymore. So it's like, you know, so is that. But it's, I don't know, there seems to be some self-awareness there, but also I don't give a crap.
Mm-hmm.
I just love the way she plays this.
Yeah. You know. Well, it's interesting, and I'll talk about this more in News and Gossip, but Carrie Aaron does a story, she actually writes something for the LA Times, and she talks about, she writes a lot of the character of Norman, how she gets into that, and what she has to do.
Wow.
To prepare for that. So I'll talk about that a little bit later in the show. But
sure. So we get in that. We see that entrance. And then, you know, the Dylan, we talked about, you know, Dylan breaks them up and that happens. But we do get, you know, some insight as to, like, life is resuming as normal, right? In the Bates. You know, Dylan's home. He's happy. You know, Norman's downstairs cooking eggs. Norma and Norman are spooning. Like, all is good, right?
Yeah. Welcome back.
And we pick him up the first day of school, so we know that it's Norman's day. He's 18 years old, but he's going to his senior year. He's normal. He gets normal. He is on his way to school, getting dropped off by his mother at 18, and decides he doesn't want to go in. And this is the thing which I love, too, like how quickly things go from like, everything's wonderful, we love each other.
0 to 10.
0 to like, get out of the car, I hate you. What did you think of that scene?
I think that it was, in going back to kind of, like, what makes, you're going to think about what triggers Norman and actually makes him crazy and completely, you know, the Norman that we know in Psycho.
Uh-huh.
And I think it's instances like that. That complete and utter total humiliation of, you're right. You're absolutely right, Nando. Norma is selfish. She didn't think for one second the effect that that would have on Norman.
Right.
But I think that he played it well. He just kind of hovered with his tail between his legs.
But in that moment, Norma, who seems to be trying to do things in the best interest of Norman, in order to please Norman, he said he didn't want to go, yet she's like, didn't say, okay, honey, it's okay not to go. She's like, you're going. Where does that come from?
That,
I mean, I don't know, you know, I'm going to put you on the spot, but I'm going to say, like, tell me the answers, do I?
My extensive knowledge in psychology, yes. I will...
No, I mean, I think that's really interesting how she just went from, because she didn't in that moment go, okay, Norman, whatever you want.
Can I interrupt just for a more of a mechanical, technical issue?
Yes.
Josh, if you're listening to us in the engineering booth, can you lower the microphone that you think is Dua's because she's not plugged in?
Oh.
And, all right, now you can put her back up. Okay, cool.
Can you hear me?
I can bring Dua's mic back up. She's been, I've been noticing that you've been audible through my microphone, not yours. So I want to make sure you were more audible.
Oh, thanks,
there you go.
Nando.
There you go. Okay.
Nando,
sorry
rescue.
About that, guys.
Has anybody
sorry
heard anything I've said?
Yes. Yes, we have. It's just never been a little more distant. It's been a little more distant.
So now that that's solved. But so the one thing I did kind of bury one important part. Norma got a phone call. Mm-hmm. Norma got a phone call from someone who's trying to sort out the estate of.
Oh, can I take back an answer? I think that that's where it came from. It came from the phone call.
Okay.
That's where it came from, because she got the phone call, and then she said it didn't matter, but then how she responded to that phone call that she got was to get mad at Norman and tell him to get out of the car.
Oh.
That's what I think.
You think that that was sort of a latent...
Because
it's kind of like out of... I mean, you never know with Norma, because it's like one moment she's here and one moment she's here, but like that seemed a little out of character because she'd been in this super nurturing, protective mode of Norman. But in that moment, she's like, get out of that car!
Yep, but in the scene before, she says, oh, by the way, here's your lunch. My mother died. It's no big deal. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. But then she blew up at him later, and I think that that's where it came from.
That's a great point. I love that. Love that. Nando, you read the same way? Or what do you
think? Yeah, I read pretty much the same way.
What do you think of the phone call, the way she handled that phone call, and that sort of like deadpan?
Well, you know, look, she's always, even in season one when she was with the psychiatrist, you know, she has this story about her parents that she always puts up.
Sure.
About her dad always smiling and her mom being a certain way. And, you know, when she finally opens up, we hear a different side of it. But I think just having a complete stranger calling her up.
Right.
And it was actually really cool when I saw, you know, we saw the episode before the Tracy and Nestor interview, and then I rewatched it. It was really a nice shot seeing the guy sitting in the kitchen table of her childhood home, and you could see the wall
with the
different, like, ages of Norma and, I guess, Caleb, how they were growing and everything. But, yeah, I mean, I obviously just threw her completely, just having a complete stranger calling her up, because again, it's a very personal story for her.
Yeah, it is. If you look close in the wall, you can see where she made them kiss.
They were handprints.
Incest.
Never mind.
But yeah, Norma definitely has a problem processing tragedy.
Sure. Well, I mean, like, and look, I don't know, man. I mean, there's talk about some bad genes. I know what's going on with that. I mean, I know what's going on with the grandmother of Norma, but, like, Norma's mom, Norma, Norman, I mean, like, not the best gene pool going on there. I'm interested to see how far back we go in an origin story. I feel like we're going to get some, I'm getting a prediction now, but I feel like we're going to get some more backstory into Norma's mom to give us some insight as to Norma and Caleb, and then some further insight into Norman himself.
Yeah.
You know?
I think that we'll have to, because I think that where this show is going is a very, very dark place. I think we're going to see some really dark stuff happen with Norma, and to offset it and to make you, you know, really kind of... what's the word I'm looking for? Sympathetic? You need to understand where it's coming from, or we're just going to lose connection with her.
Which we talk about a lot. This is the grand trick that the show is playing, right? Because, again, we know how this thing ends. I mean, the end of the show is Norman in the Bates Hotel with his dead mother in the attic, and him killing girls in the shower. Like, that's the end of this wonderful story. Yeah. So, wonderful story.
They need to start telling the story from the beginning.
Yeah, so I mean, it's got to go someplace, and it just can only get dark. I mean, it can only get to the darkest point where everyone's dead and Norman's running the hotel with his dead mom upstairs.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's and how that happens is the interesting thing. But, like, you know, so it's kind of, yeah, I think it will get darker by necessity. It's going to get darker, but we'll be there to watch because it's fascinating. So she gets the news. She, you know, is disturbed but not disturbed. I love her response, which is sort of like, no thing. I'm not interested. Like it's a salesman.
Yeah.
Like hey, your mother died. We're sorting out this will. I'm not interested. No, thank you. It's like,
I'm calling with AT&T. Would you like to extend your...
I'm not interested. like I don't know. But, her response was interesting and great and very, very Norma-like. So Norman gets to school, and he's trying to be as normal as possible. I keep using normal and Norman in the same...
Well, we've done that before.
Yeah,
I know.
They do it in the show, too.
Yeah.
Norman, that's not normal.
Norma. but Norman is trying to be as normal as possible, sitting there and eating his wonderful lunch with his little apple or orange or whatever. And then who shows up is Miss Watson.
That, you know. Which I'm glad that she came back. We did it. We interviewed her last season.
We did.
Or
we did.
Season one.
Season one. Yeah.
Before that, we knew she was going to die.
She's hanging around.
Yeah, she is.
She holds up pretty well for a decomposed corpse.
Well, not until her neck.
That's true.
about that bit.
Yeah.
That was cool.
That was cool, right? That
was
a cool sequence.
Cool.
I mean,
and those lyrics from T.S. Eliot that she was, I didn't have a chance to look up what poem that was from, but she was talking about what they were going to learn in class today.
Right. Well, so since I was going to ask you, both of you, because since this is clearly coming from Norman's subconscious, like what do you think this means? What is Miss Watson telling Norman? Is it just his own guilt? Is he just, what's happening there?
Oh, that would have been good. If somebody can write in and talk about that, because that would have been good to look up that poem, because I bet that was a little Easter egg.
Yeah, sure. I didn't have a chance to write down the lyrics, but there was something about girls. Well, I mentioned it. You guys weren't going to mention it. Come on. I took a little extra step than you.
You
I just didn't go
the
full step.
The baseball towel, you're letting us all down.
No.
I do.
Hey,
I host the show. but what I think it has something to do with, I mean, looking at the end of last season with that whole scene in the lie detector test with Norma kind of talking over Norman's ear.
Yep.
I feel like the way I look at it, he's got like fractured personalities. He's got the Norman, the innocent Norman, and then he's got that evil side, which is the Norman manifestation. So I almost feel that it's the innocent side coming up with the guilt.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's the way I look at it. And I think that's what this whole thing was about, facing. He's facing it. I think deep inside, he knows he's suppressing it, but he knows he killed her.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Now here comes the guilt that he's being racked with. And I'm sure that poem, they didn't say the name of it. It just said it was a T.S. Eliot poem. Those lyrics, that's why I have to write it down, would probably give him maybe a little more insight.
Sure.
Yeah, it was the sea, but then the next line was about girls. I was watching the DVD screener, so they didn't have subtitles. I didn't have a chance to do it.
Don't try to name drop. I was watching the DVD screener, Big Shot. I was watching my network-given DVD screener. I didn't have subtitles like the rest of you. Zeros.
I would have liked to have had subtitles. Okay. I would have liked to have subtitles. First world problems.
You're a big deal. We get it, man.
I'm a big deal. I'm running a marathon, you know? I'm running a marathon.
You brought up an interesting point, though, because I'm still curious about the fact as to where Norman, what Norman remembers and what he thinks happened, because, you know, does Norman consciously, Norman we see now consciously know that, yeah, I had sex with Miss Watson, I slit her throat, that's what happened, or is he, like, when that actually happened, was that Norma who did that? Did he black out as Norma? Or did Norma, that Norma persona, first get born in the lie detector test to take the blame for what Norman did?
He had visions of her before.
So Norma,
with Bradley.
So Norma, for all intents and purposes, Norma killed Miss Watson, or did Norman?
So let me make this a little bit. Hold
on.
I know that when Carrie talks about Norma and then Norman's vision of Norma, he refers to her as Mother Norma.
Okay.
So I think that might be easier to not confuse us.
Great. So did Mother Norma kill Miss Watson, or did Norman kill Miss Watson?
I would probably say it was Mother Norma, because
was there evidence to that? I don't remember. Was there evidence to that in the movie, in the reveal?
In the movie Psycho, he turns into his mother when he kills.
No, I know that. I'm trying to figure out the birth of this character. Because obviously Norman went to see Miss Watson, obviously there was some sex had, and then there was some throats slit. So when that happened, was that Norman or was that Mother Norma? Or did Mother Norma come about later at the lie detector test?
No, it was Mother. I think it was Mother Norma. I mean, first of all, he blacked out. He didn't remember a lot of that stuff till he was cooped up at the end of the last season, and he started getting those visions. He started realizing there was more to it than what he remembered. But I think really he was just taken over by this other part of him,
which is Mother Norma.
Yeah.
Where did Mother Norma come from? And this is important, because this speaks to the birth of Psycho.
Like that Mother Norma was back when Norman was feeling rejected from Bradley back in season one.
And she was on the bed.
Yeah,
she
was putting those things in his head about what kind of girl does that, you know. Remember when he went to confront Bradley, and Bradley apologized to him, and that kind of triggered him back to normal.
Right.
Because he was really like, I don't think you're a nice person. And the way he was saying it looked like he was going to kill Bradley right then and there in season one.
Right.
So I think it goes really, the birth of Norma really goes back from then. But however, other than the fact that he killed his father in one of those blackouts, we haven't seen her ever kill anybody.
God, I forgot that he killed his father.
Yeah.
Poor Norman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Norman's a killer.
He is. And I think that he hates that side of himself. Yeah.
He's a stoical
killer. Like, he's confused by it, and he hates it, and
once he embraces it, be careful. Move out of town.
He tried to kill Dylan. He tried to kill Dylan in the kitchen.
Yeah.
Made that little blackout.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And Dylan's like, dude, what are you doing? Okay. Yeah. He's like, I'm trying to kill you. I'm crazy.
Can we talk about Annika?
Yeah, let's get to Annika. Hello. So I'm still trying to get to the bottom of this. But anyway, that all happened. I was trying to get to the bottom of this sort of Miss Watson vision versus Norma vision versus... All I'm trying to get to the bottom of is when Norman sees Miss Watson, is this Norman going like, what happened to you? Your throat was slit? Or is he...
No, I think he's scared. I think he thinks that he killed her. I think that he thinks that he's bad because that's why he was in the woods with his gun. He's like, I'm bad.
But then...
And that's why he's scared to go back to school after that whole incident.
Yep. Right. Like, I'm spending too much time on this, but I'm just trying to figure this out.
No, it's important. It's important because...
Does he think that Norma killed Miss Watson and he knows about it and he's just trying to protect his mom?
I don't think he thinks his mom...
Or does he think that he killed Miss Watson and Norma took the blame for it? Does anyone know what I'm talking about?
Here's what I think you're trying to say, because I think it wasn't clear to me until just now for some reason. Are you trying to say that every time he sees his mom in real life, that he thinks that's the same exact person as his vision that he saw
in the lie detector. I mean, he has to. But more importantly, forget that for now. I'm just getting to the fact that he saw Miss Watson. Mm-hmm. He saw Miss Watson with her throat cut.
Mm-hmm. Like, yes.
He knows on some level from the season finale of season two.
So did Miss Watson kill Miss Watson?
He killed Miss Watson, right? No, he killed Miss Watson. So when he sees her, is he like, oh my God, there's Miss Watson. I killed her. I'm a bad person. Or is he going, oh my God, there's Miss Watson. Mother killed her. Like, this is scary. We're covering this up.
I think he's just freaked out by the fact that he's seeing Miss Watson that there's blood coming. Like, I don't think he understands where that's coming from in his subconscious.
Okay.
I think he's just freaked out.
I think he's not. Yeah, I don't think he's thinking about guilt. You know, the first two seasons, especially when it comes to Norma, she's always so nervous about, oh no, now we've done it. Now the cops are after us, or now we're about to die, or now this. She's got this nervous energy. Sure. I don't see that with Norman when he sees Miss Watson. I don't think he's thinking about, oh my God, we're going to get found out. Mom killed or I killed her. I think he's just more, again, guilt-stricken. I think it's two sides of his psyche that are suppressed, and they're fighting with each other right now. And I think it's more about that. I don't even think he's thinking about guilt. I don't think he's thinking about covering something up. I think he's just like, I don't want to go to that school because then I have to face my own demons. And he's busy suppressing them.
Yeah, cool. That's what I mean. When you suppress them, you don't process them. When you don't process them, you don't understand them. And I don't think he understands anything. Yeah. When he was running up those stairs, though, Filippo mentioned this because we actually all watched the episode a little bit early. Did you notice that all of the vents were red?
Red, yeah.
That's just something that's, you know.
All right.
Worth mentioning.
Well, you know.
Brazel, yes, I don't feel like you're satisfied.
I don't think you're satisfied. Did Norman do it?
I know.
Or did Norma? Did Norma
do the Norman? No, Norma.
Oh, God. That's right,
Annika shows up in this Porsche. And stilettos.
And that really odd walk. She has that, like, kind of bow-legged, kind of trying to be sexy, kind of bow-legged walk.
You should say that for Tracy when she was here.
I should have.
What is that?
That was a weird little walk.
That was the worst backhanded compliment I've ever heard.
No, I'm guessing that's part of the character. Because, I mean, based on what we know of the character, I'm assuming that she intentionally was walking like that.
Okay, fair enough.
It's very different than a Revolution character.
But I like the Porsche and the scene, the quintessential shot of the leg coming out of the Porsche and the pan up to the
some shots else. Never die. That always works.
That never fails. No, oldie but a goodie. To the reveal, you know, Annika. And also the shot of Norman and Norma sort of staring at her like, oh, who's that?
Yeah, did you see Norma? Norman was like totally like breathtaking. Norma was like, who the fuck are you?
Yes, for sure. And it was great. And so that sequence in when she's checking in, they're trying to figure this out. Again, it says so much about the Norman and Norma relationship from an outside point of view, because you get to see them sort of like, you get to see her watch. We're watching her watch them, you know, which is kind of great because they're fumbling and Norman's kind of like, you know, looking at her, looking down her dress and she's whatever. And then Norma's kind of looking at him, looking at her. And she's like, well, he had a rough day at school. He's at school today.
I'm going to take him upstairs.
I'm going to take him upstairs because he's mine, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very.
I'm going to put him as far away from you as possible. Man.
Yes. We're going to go spoon.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, did you read it? Like, did you read that Norma was like, stay away from my son?
Oh,
or
yeah.
Or was it very much like, because it was a lot of like, you know, he's in high school. You know, I picked him up from school. So, you know, get out of here in your Porsche. I don't know. How did you read that?
Yeah, I mean, of course. I mean, Norma's protective and territorial over her son. I think the only woman who's really broken through that has been Emma. Uh-huh. And it's taken a lot of work for Emma to break through that. But sure. Here comes this very attractive woman, dressed a little scantily with, the, like you said, stilettos.
Yeah.
And of course Norma's going to feel, well, whatever it was.
Their heels.
Their heels. In the heels. I don't know. I'm a guy.
She said stilettos.
She said stilettos?
She did, yeah.
There we go, Joe.
All right.
But did Mother Norman did? No, no. Right. But anyway, so yeah, of course she's territorial. I totally can see it a mile away. Any woman that comes, especially one that gives a little look at Norman or one that Norman checks out, and she's going to be a little protective over her son.
Sure.
Room number four.
She checks into the, you know, to the famous room number four we know from Psycho, when we know bad things happen in room number four. But yet, you know, it'll be interesting to see if this is the origin of the room number four. If Annika is the one that maybe starts this whole obsession with this room and starts him doing, you know, down this path. But, you know, this remains to be seen, I guess, but it's definitely interesting.
Well, I mean, he already watched her in the shower.
Yeah, well, we can get to that. I mean, she does ask for help with her light bulb. Mm-hmm. You know, the old "I need help with my light bulb" trick, and then she sort of kind of like not interrogates Norman, but kind of gets the lay of the land. Like, you know, your mother's a little overprotective, huh? And she really looks out for you, and you know, Norman very nervously puts the light bulb up, and it was kind of a very cute scene. I feel like it was they had some chemistry there, something flirty happening.
And again, it harkens back to Nestor said that they always use props and tools.
Yep.
And everything, that ladder was very interesting and almost like a power struggle of like, you know, he was on the ladder helping her. It was a great way to play the scene, and I think it was really good. Tracy said something when she was here that I always now, anytime I see her on screen, I keep in the back of the mind. And she said that Annika is there for a specific reason.
Right.
Almost like on a mission. So in my head, the first thing that I thought, I'll save for predictions, but in my head, I'm thinking, what is she there to do?
And to be hot.
But is she looking to get revenge? Oh. For something.
Huh. Mm. Oh, good point.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I wonder, because
what just happened? A whole bunch of people just died.
Yeah, a lot of people just died. I want to get to that in a second, but like a lot of people just died. And I also asked, you know, she's very careful, Tracy, that is very careful not to spoil anything, but, you know, I asked her, how does she feel? How does Annika feel about Norman? And she's like, you know, she thinks he's sweet. You know, as a teenage guy, he's looking down her blouse, she's catching him.
Well, and he calls her, he thinks she's a good person, even though she is obviously a lady of the night.
Right.
She's an expensive...
She's a whore. You can say it. She's a whore.
I'm just trying to be nice.
The lady of the night.
She goes to parties with expensive men. She's a courtesan.
Lady of the night.
She is, yeah.
She's dating
1895? No. What is this? This is like late at night. This is the
She likes to party at expensive parties with wealthy men. Yeah, so I'm surprised that there are parties with wealthy men, considering the whole drug trade has been sealed up. But we'll get into that.
So we see that little thing, you know, that little exchange between Norman and Annika, and then later, of course, we see Annika taking a shower, which. Very much made me very nervous when I saw this. We saw this pilot before we had Tracy on. Now, look, you know, spoiler alert, I think it's pretty clear that Tracy's going to be sticking around. I mean, Annika will be sticking around. But there's twice in this episode where I thought she wasn't going to make it.
Mm-hmm.
The first time was in the shower, but clearly they weren't going to do that yet or at all.
That would be ambitious, episode one.
That would be very ambitious.
And then you know, we'll talk about the end of the episode, how it ended, which seems very like who knows.
I think that's misdirection.
Right, it's definitely misdirection. But you know, we got Norman and his peeping Tom Norman that we see from Psycho, and this is maybe his first. This wasn't his first real move with the. Peeping Tom. Didn't he do another Peeping Tom move in season one? Or season two? I thought there was another move with him.
The closest thing I could think of is maybe when Blair Watson was taking off her clothes in the bedroom. That's the only thing I could think of, and that was right before he blacked out. But that wasn't really... it was a little bit of a Peeping Tom. She left the door open in her bedroom.
Yeah.
So that's the only one. There was nothing in the hotel, at least.
I think it's really interesting. I just want to, like, a sidebar. I, you know, we talk about Vera a lot, but... I think the way like Freddie's playing this and the way that they're writing Norman, it's very interesting that like everything around the character of Norman Bates has to do with sort of sex or repression or forbidden sex or whatever it is, and the same with this Norman, like obviously from season one, like he's confused. Is he attracted to someone? Is he having sex with someone? Norman kind of gets laid a lot. Like, he's, it's clear that he's had a lot, he's been doing sex, but Freddie doesn't play Norman as a sexual guy at all. Like, Norman is the furthest thing from a guy who's going out and getting laid. He's the furthest thing from a guy who seems to even want to have sex other than a creepy kind of smile. Mm-hmm. Yet, this guy's always in that position. It's just an interesting thing, you know.
Well, it's only two people in three seasons, really. Bradley and Blair. But he's still getting sad. I mean, for someone, your point is made. Right. Sorry.
Somebody
is
awkward and
is awkward. 17-year-old.
Antisocial.
Bradley's smoking hot. Miss Watson's smoking hot.
Yeah.
And he's got his eyes on, and poor Emma's, you know, that's a new girlfriend. Who knows? And he's got his eyes on Annika. So, I mean, like, he's not, this is a guy with the stuffed dog in his room. He just seems, you know, spooning his mother. Like, this doesn't seem like the kind of guy. I think it's an interesting choice is the way, like, this
Braswell's is all... just shocked he's getting so much ass.
No, what I'm saying is, it's an interesting choice how this whole thing is sort of surrounded by this repressed, you know, it's all about sex, but yet Norman is not playing, I mean, Freddie's not playing Norman as a sort of, like, pervert guy. Yeah. It's just a really repressed, sort of like sweet, wide-eyed guy who's sort of like, well, okay, I guess we can. But yet the desires are there. I think it's just an interesting the way to play it. Anyway, that's just my side.
Because the thing is, he's so repressed.
Sure.
That's why everything is repressed.
Sure.
And, you know, I think the moral of the story is don't repress your sexual urges.
Well, sure. And which Nando does not.
I do not repress my sexual urges. Hey, what?
I do the Blacklist podcast with you and Julia. So the inside joke, to folks.
Everybody tune into that Blacklist podcast.
It's a hootenanny.
It's a hootenanny.
I'm just going back to 1895.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
No,
it's a bee's knees.
But the reason why I got on that. The reason why I got
Which
on that in the first
nice
place,
sarsaparilla.
The reason why I got on that in the first place is I'm thinking back to him peeking in the shower, checking her out. Mm-hmm. There's no sense of like he's like, oh yeah. It's just kind of like this weird like, bump bump. What's going on here? Yeah. Like it's a kind of a menacing look. It's more of a menacing thing than anything that's sexual. That's what I find interesting about the way that this is sort of being played. Anyway, so that happens. But let's go back to season two into season three transition, our guy Nestor, and I'm talking about Romero and Dylan.
Oh, can we say one more thing about Annika before?
Yes.
I know we're going to save the ending for the end,
yeah.
I guess.
Okay.
But I just really like, I mean, other than Watson, I really like the way that Annika is using her sexuality. I mean, her whole speech in the car with Norman.
Yeah.
About it's just sex, it melts away. And she's not necessarily hitting on him, but I think someone like her, she can't help but kind of show that kind of that side to her. And the only other person I think we've really seen that way on the show has been Miss Watson.
Right.
Because Miss Watson, even playing the teacher, she still has been so concerned about Norman in a oddly, like, she can't hide her sexuality type of way.
And Norman's response is always like,
yeah.
I think he finds it intriguing because he is so repressed and he doesn't show that side of himself. And he's like, oh my gosh, this person's so sexually open. It's so alluring.
Yeah.
And she played it so well because she didn't play it slutty. It would be so easy to play that character slutty, but she doesn't. She plays it really sweet.
Yeah. I agree.
And like the way that she kind of just like smiled and smirked at him when she caught him looking down her blouse.
Yeah, that's great.
It was like really cute. And I think that that's what's going to make her a great character.
And that's what sort of speaks to that. Almost, that was almost like a meet cute situation. Like, you know, it's almost a very, there's something very sweet and almost the rapport is very like, you know, like the scene in with the ladder was, it feels like, oh, they might be a couple, you know, something may be happening here. There's some chemistry, but you know. Who knows? I agree. Well, also, just back to the Norman thing, how he reacts. I'm just still hung up on this whole sexuality Norman thing. Again, back to Freddie Moheimer, the way he plays this. I think of this whole thing of like his relationship with Norma, which is so inappropriate. And it's so, you know, it could be played a lot of different ways, but it's just a subtlety of like, I love my mother. I spoon her. I give her these long kisses. I want to be close to her. But we don't ever get this hint of like he's sexually attracted to her.
Yeah.
It's just a weird, like, closeness.
But it's an odd closeness. Like, I remember there was one scene, I can't remember if it was from season one or season two, when she's getting undressed and Norman's just looking at her.
Yeah.
And she finally realizes it herself.
It's
that's a little too far. And she kind of scolds him a little bit. But there's that weird.
Now get in bed and spoon me.
Now get in bed and spoon me. Don't watch me undress. Now just get in bed.
Yeah, no, it's weird. Okay, so Romero and Dylan. So last season, you know, the whole economy, the whole ecosystem of the town is the weed game, the weed trade, has been completely dismantled by Sheriff Romero. So Sheriff Romero has apparently come out as a law enforcement guy, has come out completely victorious. Like, he's the big winner. And we see this opening scene with the DEA, and they're burning down the fields, and the DEA agent's like, almost like, you know, backslapping Romero, like, congratulations, buddy. Like, you know, 27 acres of weed and, you know, 43 arrests. Like, you're the man. And Romero's like, yeah, I guess. Like, it's kind of interesting. I forgot to ask Nestor about that. Well, we couldn't, because
we didn't want to talk about the but pilot.
That
was,
I love that. It's sort of, again, this whole shrouded mystery. This is a moment where it's a big victory for Romero, yet he's kind of like bummed. Right? I mean, yeah, how did you read that?
I didn't read it as a victory at all. In fact, until you said that, I didn't even realize that it was a victory. I just loved, I was really sad about it.
You were sad about seeing all the weed go?
Yeah. That's exactly.
Tell us some more, Dua. Yeah. Tell us some more about yourself.
Yeah. Like 27 fields gone. Yeah. It's like, no.
It's like the American Indian. Yeah. Only you can prevent forest fires. That's right. Crying.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I would tell you more, but I just forgot. Hey-o.
That was my favorite commercial back in 1978.
I just mixed two commercials. Not only, it's the one with people throwing trash out and the Indian crying.
The Indian was littering. Smokey the Bear.
Was the forest fires.
Forest fires. Yeah. But, you know, they're both from the 70s.
They're both from the 70s.
This was very long ago.
Oh, this guy.
Oh, dear. My favorite scene of the episode was Romero. You know, if I wasn't a cop, if you weren't a cop, you'd what? Ba-goom!
Oh, yeah.
Oh, his head in the bar.
Let's look at that. So let's okay. So he has so that happens, and he goes and meets with Dylan, and he's kind of pumped up. Like, okay, listen, Dylan, we gotta get this thing going. And Dylan's like, yeah, I'm kind of cool with the weed game.
99 plants. I'll just do something myself. It's fine.
Yeah, that's the legal amount. 99.
And it's this weird moment of, like, the sheriff Romero is trying to talk the kid into, like, how we're going to run the thing. And he tells the sheriff, I'm going to be legal. And he's like, what are you talking about? I mean, that's kind of a clue there to where Romero's coming from.
But was that from Romero's own motivation? Or was that from, because he made it sound at the very end of that scene, Dylan is like, you know, we shouldn't have a problem because what I'm doing is legal. And he's like, yeah, we shouldn't. And I didn't know if that was a threat from Romero or a warning from Romero about everybody else that's going to be coming out of the woodwork now.
Shrouded in mystery.
Because you can't burn down 27 acres of plants without pissing off a lot of people.
There's a vacuum. There's a vacuum in that town right now because they lost a major source of income for quite a few people.
For the town. But, like, you know, and that, there's a lot of things happening in that moment with Dylan Romero because, you know, Dylan's kind of saying, okay, that happened. Woo, we got out of here. I'm out of here. And you know, Romero's like, how are we going to keep this thing going? I need to take a more active role. You're the kingpin
now. Well, not to forget that this is the, you know, Romero covered for Dylan twice. He said, how the story's going to be. I could have done something to you as well.
And he was very like, I was like, dude, I saved you. Yeah. I covered for you. Like, what are you doing? And he's like, yeah, man, 99 plants. Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know what that warning was, but it felt very ominous one way or another. And again, the shroud of mystery Nestor calls it, you know, his Nestor brings his shroud of mystery to every character he goes. He packs it up, he brings it out. Here's my cloak of mystery.
You need a mysterious guy. I got the guy for you.
I got the cloak right here.
It's real mysterious.
That happens. So I don't know. I guess we'll soon find out in episode 7, as Nestor said, like what the true motivations are. But I'm very curious as to how this plays out.
Well, don't forget also, you know, we didn't get to see Nestor at home. Or rather at the hotel. So I'm assuming he's still staying there. But this is a man who's lost a lot of money. So I felt maybe this was an opportunity for him to, you know, make some money with Dylan. To
he
go in as partner.
All that money from season 1, don't forget. Do you remember?
Well, that's true. He does have that.
Sure.
Well, unless it was burned down in the house.
No, he took it. At the very last scene, he put it in his house.
Yeah. Hopefully we'll come back to that.
Oh, Romero.
He put it in Romero's house.
Yeah, he has.
Yeah. That house got burned down.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's the house that got burned down. That won all the money.
You can't get anything past you. nothing gets past you. I missed it.
It's all that weed.
All right, so 27 acres of field. So Romero, but then we did see the scene you talk about in the bar where he's in the bar kind of doing his thing.
Dunk.
And the guys come up like, dude, you're supposed to be looking out for us. What's going on? It's like, it's a moment of like, A, I'm a badass, which was very cool. And B, I'm still the sheriff and I'm still in control of this town, even though I'm not in control of this town.
Yeah.
And even though he was out of uniform.
Don't forget who you're talking to. That's what that said.
All that was very cool. So good for him on that. And then Dylan goes away separately and goes and hangs out with his homie. Who's this kid now?
That was Gunner. That was Gunner? That was the kid who had a little thing with Emma, the trimmer.
That's
Was that Puka Shells?
Yeah, I think that was Puka Shells.
That was Puka Shells?
Yeah. Was it Puka Shells? No.
That That was Puka Shells?
What's Puka Shells? I'm trying to remember Puka Shells.
Puka Shells was the guy that was Gunner. He was
I think that was Gunner, yeah. Okay, he said Gunner in the beginning, so I'm assuming that was him.
That was him. Okay, we called him Puka Shells because he was like rocking the Pukas.
He doesn't look Puka anymore.
He doesn't look very Puka-ish.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it's Gunner. You can correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure that's who that guy is.
Timmy lost the Puka Shells, which is good luck. Yeah. So that happens, and then Dylan's going off, and he finds out, he feels like he's being tailed. He is being tailed, and he sees that it's his Dunkle, Caleb.
Dunkle.
Who kind of comes up and you know, doing his thing of like, hey man, I just want to, just trying to help you out. I'm just trying to hang out. And
hey, he did a really good thing. You know why?
Caleb?
Yes. He gave, well, didn't they part terms on, like, when he first came last season, Norma wanted nothing to do with him, but then he asked Dylan for money.
Yeah, he had that investment opportunity.
Exactly. Yeah. And then he asked Dylan for money, and Dylan was like, what the fuck?
Right.
And so he was like, so now he came back, and he was like, guess what? My mother died. I have some money. It's for you.
Yeah.
I think it was a peace offering.
But do we really think this is a peace offering? Because, dude, I don't know. This is another, and Caleb's bringing his own shot of mystery to this party.
It is.
Because
I think he's sincere.
I don't know. Like, he could have left, and he's like hanging out. He's like, oh, the car's
still. Yeah, because he's like, I'm your dad.
Yeah,
I know I'm your dad.
So you think? Okay, so that, well, that's so it's revealed that Caleb actually is, or at least he says he is, is the father.
Yeah.
So this means that Norma and Caleb did, you know, do the deed.
Yeah.
So Norma did have sex with her brother. Yep. That's confirmed.
Hashtag Dunkle.
Hashtag Dunkle. And to have Dylan, and that's the way it is. Now I think this was already confirmed because Norma was saying she was raped, but. You know, Caleb kind of had a different version of the story by saying, like,
our
parents are crazy. The mother was crazy. She made us do things. Mm-hmm. Like, the thing was, all we had was each other because things were so crazy. So,
you know
things
it's
happen.
Really, if you look at it, it's really interesting. Do you guys remember when Dylan was introduced? He kind of came out of nowhere, didn't really have anything, kind of got the cold shoulder from Norma. He was kind of there. Caleb is going through the exact same thing.
Sure, sure.
And so the similarities between
I'm going to take your mic back off. I'm going to take your mic off again. Okay.
The similarities between, like, I'm transforming, between Dylan and Caleb are huge, and they're subtle still.
Caleb's a real key to something. He's hanging around there for a reason. He's shrouded in mystery himself. We'll see what happens with him. Two more things to get to, and then we want to get into the news and gossip is, number one, Emma, sweet little Emma's back, and sweet little Emma, finally, Norman, in a surprise move from the surprise move that I did not see coming.
What motivated that?
Well, her diminished lung capacity.
Well, she says
that. I think
that
was part of that.
But what was that? So, you know, just for those who didn't watch, well, you're all watched because of the after show, Norman says, I think we should date to Emma, and they start dating.
They
kiss, and now we're dating. What do we do that we're dating? But where does this come from? You say it's because she gave the kind of like sob story of like diminished lung capacity. I got to live for the moment. Mm-hmm. And this is Norman's way of saying, I care about you. So let's date. I mean, what did you get from this, Dua?
I thought, so it's interesting. I originally thought that the reason that he was saying this was because he was almost like sexually charged from Annika coming into town.
Yeah, it felt like a reaction.
And he was just like, ooh, we're going to stick it. And he was just like, you know.
That's what Norman said.
That's what he said.
But he's so repressed, you wouldn't know that he's like, now, you know
what? Is
this
how you think, guys?
I think.
Is he getting inside the head of me right now?
This is Dating with Dua.
Where can I stick it?
Ask your questions. Tweet to Dua. Casey. Dating with Dua.
Is that not,
dear Dua? Where can I stick it?
Might be true. Go ahead.
Go for it.
That's what I'm thinking. I think now he's sexually charged. He's like, I think that we should date. I think the diminished lung capacity is a really good answer, though.
Right.
Because she's like, my lung capacity. Well,
that's a big thing. I mean, life is short. She put on this big soft story. Like, I don't know how much more time I'm going to have with you because my time is short. And if you're not going to be in school. There's going to be less opportunities for me to see you. So it's not only just dating. He's telling her to be homeschooled with him.
Yeah.
You know, they're going to be a couple, like, you know, they're going to be around each other for a long time, as much time as possible. But I think a lot of it, too, is also
a sweet moment, I thought.
I think it's kind of sweet. But I think a lot of it, too, also just goes back to Norman not knowing who to trust. Emma's one of the few people in the town that knows about the blackouts, at least. Doesn't know about Watson, but knows about the blackouts, knows about his situation, and he trusts her with secrets. He told her about, I believe he told her about the rape. It was on his checklist, right? He told her about his mom's rape? I believe he did. I think it was on his checklist from last season, but okay. I can't remember. But he did tell her a lot of secrets. So he trusts her. So I think
So I think if anything, on the bed when she was about to quit.
Right.
She was like, I'm quitting, and he was like, this is why we couldn't tell you. That's right. Didn't have to do with Dylan.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
She knows everything and she has all heart.
Yeah. So and his mother approves of Emma as well. So I almost feel like this is a safety valve for him.
Fair enough.
He also gets protected and he's with somebody who cares about him. And look, he knows people have been telling him since season one. I think her dad was the first person to tell him before he started taking taxidermy lessons from him that my daughter has a thing for you.
Right.
Yeah. So.
But exactly what does that mean that they're dating? Because 2 seconds after he said that they were dating,
he doesn't know how to date.
Annika walks in and she's like, "Oh, I need something." He goes, "I'll drive you."
That love triangle and that they'll be interested to see how this plays out because you have Annika who's kind of playing the femme fatale role but not really, and then Emma who's like, okay, well you're giving her a ride but we're dating but is anything happening, and that's weird. And then of course you have the she's not a triangle, it's like a square, and then you have Norma out on the other side who he's still spooning with every night. And then we touched on it earlier, but then the moment where Norma had her breakdown and she's like, and they talked a little bit, and Norman, this is kind of the relationship Norman kind of gave Norma, the like, well, I guess it's time for me to leave now. It's like, where are you going? Oh, well, we can't do this anymore, remember? That's how I read it. And she's like, no, one last time.
Yeah.
And they do that a lot. Like, where Norman tries to give it back. Like, Norma will...
It's a little power thing, I think.
It's a definite power struggle. Norma will do something to Norman, and then Norma will need something, and Norman kind of comes back with like, oh, well, you said no more spoony from the Norm Dog.
Yeah.
I don't know what that was.
Yeah. get move over, you silly girl.
Yeah, and so anyway.
Let me get next to you. It was crazy. Can I just say that I think that we shouldn't just completely ignore the fact that Norman is no longer in school now, which I think is great. I think that isolating himself from people his own age is going to be super healthy for him for the rest of the season.
Exactly. Well, like I said, I feel like Norman's going to, Norman handles all this very well, like I said last week. Last thing before we get to news and get out of here, the last scene, of course, she gives, Norman goes to give Annika the ride. They have that lovely talk
Norman was going
to
walk home.
Get dropped off and then walk back.
Walk back and be back in about an hour or so.
But yet he comes zooming back in the Porsche alone.
Yes.
What do we think about that?
Well, I mean, obviously it's a red herring a little bit because I'm sure that Annika's not gone. I'm assuming he just dropped her off and then kept the Porsche and then
she's like, "Yeah, just take my Porsche."
Yeah, and then Emma's going to be like, "Oh, you have the Porsche," and then it'll be a thing.
Well, Emma left for the day. Yeah. Emma left for the night, okay. so to establish this, it took more than an hour.
A lot longer than an hour.
Yeah, right. To establish
Emma left and he came back, and so who knows?
But I don't think Norman. She's not in the trunk or anything. So we'll see. All right,
let's take us to
I may have a couple.
You want predictions or you got some news and gossip?
No, I have a little news and gossip.
All right,
No, it's just it's just a little bit of news and gossip that I have. I love what I love about A&E and I love about this show is that it really helps and it not helps. It really takes care of their fans. So they were live tweeting all during the premiere episode of season 3, which is great. There are a whole bunch of stories. There's a story on Entertainment Weekly about Carlton Cuse. It talks about kind of like his, how he came to be, a lot about his younger years and his early jobs. Check that out if you can. I actually have that on my Twitter page if you want to check that out, @DuaCasey. Also, there is a story about Carrie Aaron wrote a story for LA Weekly talking about how she kind of goes about writing the role of Norma. And she said, which I found really interesting, the first thing that she has to do is forget that she's been through therapy.
Right.
And she has to kind of throw all of that out the window, because anytime you look at the decisions that Norma makes as a character,
of what you would do if you have any kind of like...
If you have any kind of a healthy mental process going. So check that out. I also want to shout out to Girl in Room Number 9?
Yes.
She posts great things on our Twitter pages, and she also corrected me. Last week I said that it was The Purge. It was The Plunge.
It was The Plunge, yes.
It was episode 6 was The Plunge.
The Purge is that really bad movie franchise.
My new dance.
Yes. She always posts great things, and it's really fun, and thank you so much. We love seeing those. Another one is have you guys seen the preview? Sorry. The preview, it was the huge trailer. They used 100 cameras. It was from the song that we just played.
Yes, yes, yes.
They used a huge 100 cameras surrounding a huge carousel-like stage that was rotating. And in this, they actually show Norman dressed as Norma.
Oh.
So it's really great. Check that out if you haven't. Yeah. And they do like a 45-minute YouTube, like behind the scenes of it. That's really great as well. Yeah. Hashtag Dunkel. Go ahead.
That's it. That's all I got. That's a lot, Dua. Thank you. Let's get quick predictions, like 10 seconds each, go.
I think that Annika has something to do with Nick. Do you remember Nick that died? I think that Annika has something to do with
his
Nick.
Niece.
Maybe.
Oh, you know what? I could see a family resemblance there. I think that's a good one.
Yeah.
I mean, the obvious one. I think Annika might not be in the next week's episode. Just to play off this red herring.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. The Porsche will be visible, but she won't be. And I think there'll be some suspicion, and then she'll probably end up popping
up. Maybe she's tied up somewhere. Right.
Maybe she's tied up somewhere. But I think they're gonna play up this red herring. I agree with the two of you that she's still alive. But I think they're gonna play this up.
I'm very curious as to see what Caleb's role will be with Norma, and I wonder if Caleb and Norma will sort of warm up to each other, and I don't want to see that, because there'll be some weird, you know, will Romero be jealous? Will Norman be jealous? Yeah. Like, there's something there in this creepy family incestuous. Romero loves Norma. Don't get it twisted.
No Mero.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
No Mero.
All right. That's it. Thanks for joining us this week. It's great to be back. Joe Sanfilippo will be here next week as well. You can find him on his website, josephsanfilippo.com, and at Joe Filippo on Twitter and Instagram. Dua, where can we find you?
You can find me at Dua Casey, at DuaKaissi.
Nando.
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram. Oh, look there. At Nandovel, Nandovel. You can also find me here on other shows like The Walking Dead and Blacklist with you, sir, and Survivor and a bunch of other stuff. And, hey, feel free to tweet at me or follow me. I'm running the marathon on Sunday. the LA Marathon. And, cheer. Give me some support.
Or tips.
Because these guys won't.
I'm Joe Braswell. You can find me here at AfterBuzz and The Blacklist with Nando and Joe and Julia and Dua. Also on Twitter and Instagram at Joe K. Braswell. Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you, Josh. Bye-bye.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.